Yeah, it was.
Okay. I hope that's all right.
That was great.
Oh, it will be fine. Like
Yeah.
he's, we will. He'll edit the brevity if there's too much space or anything like that. All of that will be wiped
Okay.
clean, and it will flow perfectly. I guarantee you.
Okay. All
I
right.
learned a lot from you. I learned a lot from you. Like I said, I thought of from, you know, I was telling Doug before this, out of all of the individuals, I think I liked you and John Fell Ryan the best. Not to say that other people didn't give me a lot in there, but yours about the window and about the Minotaur and everything, I thought about for days and weeks and months, and there would be like little insights that all of a sudden I would like all of a sudden understand what you were talking about. And I just wanted to say that I appreciate that.
Well, John Phil Ryan is the one that brought me into it. He's the one who said he had seen what I'd written, and he was the one who recommended me for it. So, Monarch Story was great. Butterfly Story.
Oh, I appreciate that, you know, because
Yeah.
you know, I don't want to seem paranoid or anything, but I do think about on, you know, if you put the movies together, like Clockwork Orange and Eyes Wide Shut, The Shining, certain things, even shit, Lolita. I mean, it's obvious in a lot of there's an MK Ultra thing going on there, or some kind of like programming, and you get the sensation that, hey, wait a minute, maybe I'm being programmed by Kubrick, or at least maybe told secrets or something. I mean, I think that's part of the allure. It's easy to think that.
Well, I think one of the things that he's doing, if you follow from film to film, he confronts authoritarian structures. And what is one of the big authoritarian stories? And it comes up in The Shining. And it's the whole
Oh,
Abraham and Isaac story,
absolutely.
the sacrifice, and the whole idea of the righteousness of Abraham by willing to sacrifice, and the questions that those bring up now, and as far as authoritarian nature and doing something without question out of a matter of faith and right sense of righteousness. And I think that's one of the he does, brings up periodically as an examination of that. And you do have a confrontation with authoritarian structures from film to film.
That's
And
beautiful.
so,
Oh
yeah.
man, that's good.
Yeah, now that you say it. Well, no, I'm just it's interesting because if you think about all his films, he's looking at power structures and then like taking a real hard look at why the people behave the way they do in those power structures.
One of the things I think he's doing also in The Shining, and he, I think he also he turns it on the audience and brings the audience in, because I think he's kind of set up The Shining also as well for us to examine, as far as you were talking about women and children. I mean, back then when The Shining came out, abuse was really not talked about so much. I mean, it was beginning to be talked about, but it's something that really wasn't talked about that much. And even I think Stephen King, even what he wrote then, he has admitted since then he would have probably done it differently. He hadn't stopped drinking yet, right? But I think
No,
it's
even drugs, all of that addiction, that's an
yeah,
addiction story. I mean, almost all
right,
Stephen King books are about Stephen King. They're almost always writers
yeah.
and things of that nature. He always writes from personal experiences. So yeah, that's his story, basically.
And so you kind of get a sense, yeah, Yeah, except, and you kind of get a sense of a slowing off of responsibility at some point. He started off great. You get a wonderful impression with Stephen King at the beginning of the nature of abuse, the psychology of abuse, what it does to the individuals who are experiencing it, and what it does to the person who is, who is the abuser. You get a wonderful picture of that, and then you get carried up to the oh, and then you get carried to the, hotel. And that just kind of dissolves. It ends up being sloughed on, slowed off on something else as being responsible. And it's almost like him slowing off responsibility. And the thing is that if you take a look at I think that Kubrick was also kind of turning it around the audience, where the way that he set up the thing as far as the audience, you have some people who like get mad at Wendy. as far as and feel so irritated with Wendy. They almost begin to sound kind of like a Jack character. They get so mad at her. They don't like her. They don't like the way that she sounds. They don't like the way that she looks. There's all these different things they don't like about her. Mm. And I think he's kind of turning that misogyny around and taking a look at the audience. I've did a thing recently where I wrote about it, comparing it to the end of Paths of Glory. At Paths of Glory, you've got Kirk Douglas. He's standing outside the bar, and Christiane Kubrick goes up and she sings, and so you feel this great empathy. You've been nurtured through this movie into feeling this great empathy for the French troops as opposed to the authoritarian structure over them, right? And now you've got the troops themselves. They're in there, and they're taunting this woman. You know, they are, you know, just making it hell for her. She's scared as can be. And what makes you the audience aware in a way that they're not supposed to be joining in on this is Kirk Douglas on the outside and his kind of disapproval that he's showing. You can see in his face this kind of disapproval for what's going on. And you do end up having a turnaround in that where the soldiers are swayed by her, what she sings. But you don't have in The Shining, you don't have a Kirk Douglas figure standing off, letting the audience know how they're supposed to feel about Wendy. You don't have, and I kind of feel like that he's kind of got that there, where he's, you get it all what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because you have, I'm just thinking, because I have thought for years about that, the intense reactions that the audience can have towards Wendy. Also, like the intense reaction that Stephen King himself had against Wendy, and how he went ahead and he had this beautiful blonde, that he, you know, Rebecca De Mornay, that he went ahead and put in his movie, which doesn't really fit in with it. And what was it that was so, what was it about Wendy that makes them, you know, whatever? I don't know whether I'm communicating here or not. That's why it's easier for me to write it. I wrote out a thing on it, but because I put a lot of thought into that recently. I had put a lot.
Don't have any frets about how you've communicated, because I've actually enjoyed tonight immensely.
Okay, good.
But I think it's probably, if you're down in Georgia, then that's midnight for you right now, because you'd be on Eastern.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I think you'll be what?
No, I was going to say, this is nothing for me. I am a night owl. I stay up all night writing, you know, doing whatever.
So, I wish I could stay up all night with you, but I cannot.
Okay. Well, thank you for asking me, and I hope that this, you know, worked out well for you guys. And
did.
I hope that I don't.
Yeah. I'm sorry we had that glitch with the book. I should have said something sooner.
Oh, man, what happened to the book? I mean, yeah, it's just out there in, you know, nowhere land.
Right.
So.
Well, did you?
No, because we made.
Did you mail it yourself, or was it something where you communicated with the publisher, you need something mailed?
I took your address that you had given. I took your address and I gave it to my husband, and it was the same thing. I gave it to him, and he mailed it out when he went into the, you know, down to the studio. What the morning? It wasn't the next morning, because I think the next morning I looked at it was a Sunday morning, so it was the morning after that. He mailed it then. We have moved since then, but when we were. He mailed it from a post office that we've had problems with before.
Hmm.
I mean, it had been a long time since we'd had problems there, but we've had problems with them before. So it may have just been that. Who knows where it is? But
well, one day maybe you or I will see it again and we'll think.
I doubt that. It's been eaten. It's devoured. It's down there in some, you know, whatever room where they, you know, put these lost things, you know. It'll end up in, I don't know, what do they do with that stuff? Do they end up putting it down
in the trash
eventually? I don't know how many years it takes before they dump it in the trash.
I worked at UPS for years, and it seems
Oh, you
like,
did? Okay.
yeah, every now and again, something would just open and stuff would spill out, and you try
Oh,
and
wild.
you try to pick it all back up and put it in, and then there's tape things to try and tape it back up. But when it happens, it's fairly devastating. And
Done.
Sometimes
Okay.
things go, because you're standing on all over, it's like corrugated iron that all these belts and stuff are, you know, kind of feeding through and around, and so you're standing, and oftentimes things will, you know, go to the floor, and there's belts and stuff, and you can't go under there until the whole building is basically shut off, and then I have no idea
Oh, that's interesting.
what the cleaning crew would do with that stuff.
That's interesting because I've had no picture of, except for, you know, the little things that you used to see back, you know, years ago of them shuffling letters, you know, them going through the, you know, yeah, I've had no conception of what it looks like, you know, now at all.
Well, you think, like, people often think, yeah, people often think of it in terms of like, oh, it's in a warehouse somewhere, but with UPS, it's never, everything's in transit to some other vehicle to go someplace else, you know? So it's like out of this truck, onto the belt, into this truck, and then it goes to this place and then sorted again into a littler truck to go to your house or, you know?
Okay.
Not a safe,
yeah.
Not a very hospitable environment. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, well, I like to listen to books. And so for me, if I have time to do menial tasks, it was a decent job. It was physical, but I would listen to podcasts and books and stuff. And I enjoyed that. Chinese food delivery.
Oh, see, you enjoy audiobooks, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually do too.
I can't do audiobooks. Really? I can't do audiobooks.
Well, I'll tell you what I did. Like he said, you have to have a remedial job where what you will do is like you'll go through your job and you'll have to listen to the same book like multiple days in a row. Like you're not going to get everything that happens in the book and one pop. You'll get the main stuff.
Oh, interesting. Then you go, that's how you do it?
Yeah, that's how I do it. And I did that with like Philip K. Dick's books a couple of times where I'd listen and then I even like experimented where I'd listen to one chapter a couple of days in a row. And then I would read the next chapter. And by the end of it, I could not remember which chapters I read and which ones I listened to. But there's no way in hell that you're going to get all of the information that you need to in one listening of a book. Unless
If you're sweeping or driving or washing dishes, these are things that don't require very much brain and
I mean, if you read, the older you get, the more you realize that you don't remember everything you read either. I mean, it's in like a month's time, you can go back and you read something. You're like, or even in your own stuff. Like I've written stuff before, gone back 3 months later. And I was like, this is fucking brilliant. Because I do not remember writing anything that was in there. But
no. Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah. I'll do that with, other material, but I have not done that though with audiobooks because I find myself totally glazing over and being unable to get it at all. So I have to read. Yeah. In fact, instead I will do with movies when I'm doing something that I really don't really need to be paying that much attention to. It's kind of if I movie that I don't need to pay attention to or something like that, then I'll have off on the side.
My wife's a fine artist too, and so when she's painting, if it's not super well, no, for the most part she'll listen to things or she'll watch TV shows when she's painting, but mostly she's just listening to it. But the problem is if something's too compelling, then she stops working and she pays attention.
Exactly.
It's
that's the same thing that I'll do. And so it has to be, for me, it has to be in English or something, you know, so that I can catch it. And I don't want it to be too compelling so that, you know, so that it doesn't stop me and pull me over. But no, it's also just the fact of audiobooks. It's just that for some reason I lose track. Listening to the voice, I end up losing track and I can't absorb it.
At this point in my life, I have 3 kids. They're my lifeline. One little guy. I can't read in bed. I hit the pillow and I'm down.
Oh yeah, they'll do that to you, won't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Just even one, I can imagine. You know, three. That's yeah. If one can do that to you, three would just be yeah.
Well, it sure was fun meeting you, and
it was good meeting you guys.
Yeah, I look forward to reading more of your work. So.
Oh, well, thank you.
We'll have to have you back.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay. Well, so I'll talk to you. Okay.
Have a great night. Bye bye.
You too. Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night, guys.
Good night. Okay.